Good evening. The Sojourn is a novel about a young boy who's born in America and whose mother is killed by a train, and so his father takes him back to the Austro-Hungarian Empire, where he's raised as a shepherd and a hunter. There's a young cousin who is brought to the family as well, and the father raises the two boys as sons. When the war comes in 1915, because of their hunting abilities, they're enlisted into a sniper unit, the Scharfschützen, in the Austro-Hungarian army. And they do their job very well along the Italian front, Austrians against the Italians. The passage I'm going to read takes place in 1917, in November, just after the Battle of Caporetto, where Joseph and his friend Zli is named Marian, but they call him Zli. Zli Pass, it means bad dog in Slovak. They are, after Caporetto, they're enlisted to hike into the Italian Alps and to out-snipe another sniper. And this is the story of their passage. The northwestern Carpathians in which I was raised were a hard place, as unforgiving as the people who live there. But the alpine landscape into which Zli and I were sent that early winter seemed a glimpse of what the surface of the earth looked and felt and acted like when there were no maps or borders, no rifles or artillery, no men or wars to claim possession of land and snow and rock alone, parried in a match of millennial slowness so that time meant nothing and death meant nothing. For what life there was gave into the forces of nature surrounding and accepted its fate to play what role was handed down in the sidereal march of seasons, capable of crushing in an instant what armies might, millennia later, be foolish enough to assemble on its heights. And yet there we were, ordered to march ourselves, for God, not nature, was with us now, and God would deliver us in this world and the next when the time came for that. In Tolmezzo, we picked up another unit of Landeschützen along with a Bergführer, and separated so that each team would be no more and no less than a day apart, ours leaving one day later. We hiked through the Wolleyer Pass to Kotschukmathuen, the names of places told to us by our mountain guide, and roads gave way to footpaths, and footpaths disappeared into forests, and what towns and hamlets we came to and passed through then didn't matter enough to name. So we hiked in silence as the soldiers with whom we trekked were inclined. And they, these soldiers of the East Tyrol, bore the years of their own detached fighting in the distant terrain of the Alpine War. When we stopped to rest and take water and food and they removed their protective clothing, I saw fingers missing from frostbite, unkempt beards, and deep carved lines radiating from the edge of their eyes and across scabbed and leathery faces. And although we remained silent as we moved, over tea they, who seemed to know who and what we were, would remind us in a tone strangely hieratic, as though they could see into our disappointment at having been ordered away from the Socha, that this too was a front. These mountains, borders that separated centuries of their own culture, convictions, and quiet life from the new false sense of nation that the Italians, in their folly, had already succumbed to. And of this we had no doubt as we fell back into formation and followed our guides along some path that remained invisible to us, and yet to them had been carved in stone by great-great-grandfathers long ago. As the days wore on, the cold slowed us more than the snow, and had we not the shelter of a mountain refuge each night along the way, we might have survived one bivouac in that terrain, but perished by the morning. So fast and hard would those temperatures change, bringing blizzards that kept us snowbound sometimes for days, and the journey that should have taken a few weeks by foot looked more likely to stretch into months. But even these periods of rest were seen as necessary to the nature of the landscape, and never did I sense any form of boredom or acedia enter into the disposition of those men, so Roman and stoic, and in the makeup of body and soul were they. When the front that had brought weather cleared out, we rose and pushed on as ordered. There was nothing to gain by kindness in that war, but those men drew us into their numbers and gave to us from their own store the woolen socks and balaclavas and mittens made of rabbit skin that they wore as we hiked and waited, week after week, the landscape breathtaking, the altitude increasingly punishing, and we followed the arc of the range south by southwest and into the Dolomiten, where we replaced our alpenstocks with ice axes and strapped nailed soles to our boots and roped ourselves together as we climbed with Zli and me in the middle of the team, so that the veteran guides could both lead in front and bring up the rear. The paths we walked are now discernible only to those guides. And for a few late autumn days, during which we hiked steadily and without rest until we came to the mountaintop refuge along our way and slept, I felt a sense of peace in that war, within myself and without, amid the unexpected beauty of those peaks that lured and threatened us like enemies themselves, though a threat unlike the arbitrariness of battle on the Socha, because the mountains seemed in equal measure exacting and prepared to forgive. Even so, we were reminded of how indiscriminate and cold this enemy who would survive us all as we approached Mount Marmalada and proceeded up the face, a full traverse, the only option we were given. A father and his son, who had joined the Landeschutzen together and who knew the mountains so well that they could point out critical discrepancies in the maps issued from the high command, were the last two on our rope and saw too late the thin ice layer that masked the crevasse over which we had all passed, blinded and hunched by exhaustion and the weight of our packs. And the old man dropped through like a stone, pulling the line taut in an instant, and his son in a rapid slide toward him, so that the boy, I say this remembering that I was just 18 at the time, but this lad, strong as he was, could not have been a day over 15, had to lean back and dig his heels into the snow as he yelled, "Upstairs!" to Zli and me, and we dropped and dug in hard with our axes. But the shock and dizziness weakened his footing, and he began to slip as the crumbling layer through which his father had broken cracked and shattered, and the rope moved through it like wire through wax, so that he too now fell as the top gave way beneath him. Slowly, the weight of the two men dangling from that rope began dragging Zli and me to the edge of the crevasse until I could peer down into its faint blue and see the boy struggling to right himself in near daylight while the old man twisted on the darkened, bitter end. As we tried to haul them out of that grave, the rope began to slice and fray against the hard crust, our own footing gradually giving way, and I saw the boy look down at his father, whose figure had stopped spinning, and up again at me, and pull his knife out of its sheath, cut the rope above his head, and disappear into the ice. We continued on over less daunting peaks, but with the storms and the weather becoming more severe, until one day we forded steep hills, which we were told were the headwaters of the Adige, and in what little talk there was among these men, there was mention of Advent soon. And at the next refuge, a makeshift wreath of fresh spruce and paraffin candles, unburned and waiting, sat on the table, left by villagers or the unit of Landeschutzen that had been there before us, although days or weeks before, we weren't sure. And yet there was little else to mark the time since we had left Kotschak and begun our long descent toward the Asiago Plateau. So unremitting was our trek of ascents and descents through the seemingly endless and impassable world of forest, rock, and snow. And on the last day of November, at an outpost where our team caught up with the unit we had long been dogging, Commander Klammer passed around a clear glass bottle of grappa to celebrate his patron, St. Andrew. And I remembered celebrating the same, my father's name day, each year in Pasvina, the mutton, the rich red Hungarian wine, before he took the Szlivovice and the only time drink was ever allowed. The reminder that the old man painted with a parted beard and a scroll brought wisdom in the word, and this all foreshadowing the Savior the pious men surrounding me said was to come. My father, who was drunk on so little in those days, used to say with a cherubic smile, although his tone had sounded sad, "There is God in all of this." And I wondered that night in the mountains of Austria if he was right, or if he was bending to the fear that over the years had begun to encompass him. And I said out loud, "Where is God in all of this, Father? Where?" But he was silent there. No word, no wisdom. Was he where I had left him, his kiss dry, his eyes wet, or was he silent now because he had gone from me?